Welcome, everybody, to this latest edition of the Purple Knights podcast. It's been a while. I've been on hiatus, mostly because of the slowness of news and new things in general coming out from the Prince Estate. But I'm happy to be back now, and I'm joined today by Ernie Wiles, a.k.a. Day Droppin' from Michael Dean's podcast on Prince. And thank you, Ernie, for joining me on Zoom.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me here, Chris. I really appreciate it. I know we've been trying to get together and get something done here. And, you know, it's a pleasure to be doing this with you today.
Yeah, it's exciting. And today we're going to talk about Graffiti Bridge, the album. We're going to save the movie for another occasion because I wanted to do an actual full-blown movie commentary. I'm not sure how that's going to work yet, but we'll get that ironed out sometime in the near future, I'm hoping. But so today we're going to talk about the album, which was released in the UK on the 20th of August. And in the U.S. on the 21st of August, 1990. So it's been a while. I was 10 years old when the album came out. So that'll tell you how long ago it was. But yeah, great album. Some people say it kind of marks the end of Prince's first golden era. I don't know if I agree with that or not, but we can get into that as we go along. But, Ernie, how Ernie normally does it is he does, when we go through track by track, he normally rates each track out of 10. So I've followed in kind and kind of prepared notes and with my rating out of 10 for each track. So should we get right into it, Ernie? What do you think?
Let's get right into it.
Okay, so the opening track. Can't stop this feeling I got. I rated it 8 out of 10. I really love the vibe and message of this song. It's really upbeat. A great way to kick off the album. And as we know, the majority of the songs on Graffiti Bridge were recycled from older demos that Prince had recorded earlier in the 80s.
Right, so, all but two, I believe.
All but two. Okay, that's good to know. Yeah, that makes sense. And so this first one originally was demoed, I believe, in the 1999 sessions. Ernie, does that sound right?
Yes.
Because I know the demo version eventually did come out in 2019 on 1999 Super Deluxe. And so we got to hear that version officially, but of course hardcore fans have been hearing it on low quality bootleg for many years prior to that. But I gotta say that I prefer this slicker updated 1990 version to the 1982 demo. I just like the sound of it. It's a lot crisper, a lot more, it feels like there's a lot more energy to it. The demo's kind of slagging a little bit in tempo, whereas the Graffiti Bridge version is a little bit faster and a little bit brighter sounding overall. Great way to open the album. Great way to open the film as well. We don't get a vocal version per se in the film, but it does open the film as well. I really like this track, and I think it's a great way to open a great spiritual Prince album. So, Ernie, what are your thoughts on Can't Stop This Feeling I Got?
Yeah, I'm going along with what you ended with. It kind of segues right into what I was thinking of. That this is a track that it sets a mood, like you said, for the spiritual album collection that this winds up being, as well as and this winds up this is the bloodline and everything to the movie, so it makes sense. And being that it's spiritual the way it is, this song, I think it's a decent opener. I don't know what could be a better opener than what this is. So for this particular collection, it works as a pretty good opener. He's had much better openers in this one, but considering what the collection that we've got, it's actually pretty good. It's very 90s sounding, though. That it is. And that's okay. There's one thing, though, that this particular track suffers from. A lot of Prince tracks suffer from this, is what I refer to as the fade out syndrome. And that's where a Prince track fades out right when you want to start hearing more. Perfect example of that for me anyhow is Vicky Waiting. When it fades out, it's like it just starts picking up, and there's another version where you get to kind of hear the rest of it. Yeah. But we waited so many years before that made its way out for us to be able to listen to on a bootleg end. That when I was hearing a track like that and like this one, and it starts fading out, you're like, oh, it's getting crazy. And then where's the 12 inch of this, you know? Hey, maybe one day, right? Maybe one day. There's got to be an extended version of it. He doesn't do anything by accident, so he's not going to intentionally fade it out when he's barely starting to rock out with the guitar and it starts going wild towards the end. What's the purpose in that? So there had to been a timing thing to make it condensed and make it the right length of track, because none of these tracks are actually very long. And that's not typical for a Prince album. These tracks are not very, very long. None of them go past 6 minutes. They're relatively quick songs, and this is one of them that was probably cut down to fit that mold or to make room for another track here or there. In terms of scoring it, it's okay. But because it's not that strong of an opener, in my opinion, and again, because of that Prince fade out thing that I'm talking about, I got to give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay, that works.
Yeah.
I totally can get on board with that. And there's two more things I was going to mention. And one of them is piggybacking off your comment, Ernie, about the fade out syndrome, which I totally completely agree with, because right before the fade out, there's what I consider to be a top five or maybe even top three Fred Scream on the record. Yeah. The scream is absolutely visceral, and it's just coming from his gut. The only other scream that I can really compare it to is the really visceral, guttural scream on Endorphin Machine. It's sort of the same vibe as that scream, but yeah, he really, it's almost like he's screaming his lungs out on that one. But then you get the crazy guitar really starting to go, and then the song's done. So yeah, I totally agree with the fade out syndrome thing. And then the other thing is, there's also a lyrical allusion to another 1982 outtake that we eventually did get on the 1999 Super Deluxe, which is Rearrange. There's the whole lyric about maybe we've all got to rearrange our brains, and it's sort of a callback to the Rearrange outtake from the 1999 session. So retroactively, it's like an Easter egg for hardcore Prince fans, and I really think that's a really cool element to the track. But yeah, that's right. Can't Stop This Feeling I Got. And next, we've got New Power Generation Part 1. And Ernie, start this one off for us. What are your thoughts?
Well, personally, I think, if anything, this might have been a stronger opener. Really, because this song is ushering in a whole idea that he would keep throughout his career, the New Power Generation. So I think it's a strong message to give out, both because it tells you, hey guys, here we are, for purposes of the movie, And in terms of a bigger scope, this is the message that we're also giving of the new power generation. So I think it would have been a good opener. But the song itself, I love the message, and I like the spirit behind the song. You have, of course, we're able to compare it to Bold Generation, which when I hear, it's hard for me to go along with those lyrics. I always go with these lyrics because that's what I was so accustomed to. And nostalgia keeps me singing the wrong lyric in my head. But this one also, like the first track, has a very distinctive 90s sound, but I do like that. And I'm sure you would agree that this reminds me of the same thing as I forget the exact names, the Lotus Flower bookends, the From the Lotus and then Back to the Lotus. Is that
Back to the Lotus? Yep.
Yeah. And how those things were one, and then they were cut up to make bookends on here. And that's what happened here. I always prefer to do it. I tried mixing it together. It's hard to mix parts one and two because there's obviously something missing in between that ties it. This is another one that one day I would love to be able to hear the complete part one and two put together. And I think this suffers from that it does. It's not that way. You know, but I do like on a musical tip, I like the right before, right at the bridge, how it gets very whimsical in there. Yeah, it really, it's very much in the vibe of the album. The whole album was kind of done up in that kind of sound, that which was redone, was done up with that kind of a sound. It's the kind of thing that he was doing in late 80s, 90s, early 90s. He had there was times when he would have different kind of sounds that he would do, and that was kind of the sound of that, the house party sound, I guess you could say. And so that's what he had going on there. And this song kind of ushered that in as well. But I mean, ultimately it's a chant song. It's a song where you have to chant, we are the new power generation and everything. And it's got a very loud chant thing going on there. And who doesn't like a song like that? Who doesn't like a good chant song? But because this is split, this is another track that suffers from the Prince fade out syndrome really bad, because you know there's more and you hear more, but you know there's more in between because it doesn't gel.
Right.
So this really suffers from that. But it is energetic. It is an energetic track, and that's why I think it should have been the opener. I had Can't Stop This Feeling as a 7. So for me to think that this is a better opener, I have to give it a better score. It just comes to pass that this one is an 8 out of 10 because of the message that it's giving you, because this is when we know what the MPG is.
Okay. Okay. For me, I totally agree with all of your comments, first of all, and you echoed a lot of my points. For me, the score out of 10 did take a slight ding just because it's so affected by the fade out and the disconnect with the two parts. So I gave it a 7 out of 10, but that's not to say I don't love it. That's not to say it isn't great. And I do believe you're right, Ernie, and that it would almost make a more proper album opener. I like, you know, it's hard to say because this iteration of the song and then Bold Generation, they're so vastly different, you know. Like you said, New Power Generation is more of that 90s house party sound, whereas Bold Generation is more jazzy and organic sounding.
Right.
But for the song that it is, I really, really love this song. And to your point about it being a chant song, it absolutely is. And it always gets me hyped up because, you know, speaking, you know, retroactively, you know, we know that Prince used the New Power Generation name in some form or another for the rest of his career. So the fact that this song sort of kicks off that whole that whole generation, pun slightly intended, sort of makes it a really cool point in Prince's career and gives it a lot of historical significance, which I think in my mind buoys the impact of the song as well. But great, great track, and I really love it, and I really wish that it was one complete track and not split into two parts, because I really think that you're right, Ernie. After the fade out of part one, there's got to be a section there that's missing to bridge the two parts together, and I really wish we were able to hear it in a more complete form. Yeah, so that's my biggest gripe about the song, and that's why, in my mind, the rating took a little bit of a hit out of 10, because it's so jarring. And I've been trying to blend it together myself, you know, for the better part of 20 years. And like you say, it's impossible to create a seamless mix, because it can't be done. So,
right.
Prince Estate, if you're listening, yeah, New Power Generation, the whole mix, the 12-inch version, if you will, give it to us. Yep. So that would be great. So, and next we have the first of the Associated Acts to appear on the Graffiti Bridge album, which I'm just going to say briefly that I'm kind of annoyed by the fact that the Associated Artists songs are on this album and not on the Purple Rain album, because right.
It's the only album that does that.
Yeah. Since this is supposed to be the de facto sequel to Purple Rain, you would think it would follow the same format as the Purple Rain album and contain only Prince tracks, but no, this contains the whole gamut of Associated Acts and Associated Artists. And it's kind of annoying in a sense to me, just the dissymmetry of it, or the asymmetry, I should say. Asymmetry is the correct term. But yeah, that being said, this is a guilty pleasure song for me. There's something about it. I think it's mainly the drums and bass that really just grab me and bring me along for the ride. And I have a grin pretty much throughout the entire duration of the song. And I just, there's something really primal and really visceral about the vibe of this song. I don't know if it's because I'm a dude and this song is really about, you know, macho bravado and all that stuff, so I kind of, my reptile brain kind of buys into that machismo aspect of it. But yeah, Orris and Jerome's swagger in this song is on full tilt, and I just love this song. So for me, I gotta say it's a 9 out of 10. And one other comment that I had was Prince's backing vocals and the clever way they incorporated them in the movie. I love Prince's high falsetto backing vocals on this track as well. And it's just it's a fun party track, but it hooks me in hook, line, and sinker every time I hear it. So that's Release It for me. Ernie, what are your thoughts?
I was thinking, I didn't have this on my notes, but to go off of what you had started with regarding this being a soundtrack that has other Associated Artists where Purple Rain doesn't, I wonder if that wasn't intentional to kind of disassociate it from that soundtrack as well. Because, I mean, I believe Graffiti Bridge wasn't meant to be a direct sequel. It was kind of pegged in to be a direct sequel by Warners to do it that way. Yep. It wasn't something that was intentionally done like that. So maybe the whole idea of having other artists and other people involved, and then we're going to feature their songs as well, probably had a lot to play into why they were featured here. Because again, you don't see that with anything else that he's done like that. And never, I don't think you have any albums that are so prominently feature other artists with him. Not even the last thing that I could think of that was remotely close to that was Raven to the Joy Fantastic. And even then, some of those tracks are just featured artists.
Right.
Nothing major, where this is the most where he's had other people directly involved with his albums. I think I can't think of any other album that did that. But the song here, Release It. Okay. I dig the song 100%. I don't want to go start on the wrong foot here, but yeah, that I do love the song a lot. It is a time song for sure. The lyrics are extremely playful, and like you said, very bravado driven lyrics, and with an awesome saxophone breakdown. Who doesn't like a good saxophone? And this song completely oozes Morris and can only ever be sung by Morris. I mean, this is his tune. This is his track. This is Morris Day doing this. And though this song does fade out, this does not suffer from the Prince fade out syndrome. Not because it's more singing it, but because it's appropriate that it fade out when it does. The fade out almost tells a story in and of itself. He's leaving. Come on, let's go. So it fades out. It makes sense. So yeah, I mean,
he actually says in the song, he said, "Let them drums take it. Let's get out of here."
Yeah, let's get the hell out of here. Boom. And then the horns playing, looping in the background, Release It going and everything, and the drums playing, and then fades out. It makes sense. He left the music playing to fade because he's a pimp like that, and he rolled out. And that's cool. One thing on here, I know that Prince has backing on it. Get some good headphones, and when you put it on at around the 15-second mark, there's a voice saying something like, I think it's doing a countdown. 2-1 and then something else. I don't know if that's Prince or if that's Morris. It's hard to tell, but the next time you listen to the song, right at the 15-second mark, listen for that, because it's there. Now, score on this, I'm with you 100%. It's a 9 out of 10. This is a funky dance groove. It still is today, and this shows you what the time is in Graffiti Bridge. It's a perfect representation of what the time is and how Morris is, and the way it's used in the movie is perfect. It's awesome. I love that part of the movie. I'll just say right now, I'm not a big fan of the movie in general, but that's a topic for the other day. But that particular scene, that particular track in that movie worked out phenomenally. It was perfect. It's a 9 out of 10. It's an 8 out of 10 if Prince sings it, because obviously there's somewhere, there's got to be a recording of Prince singing this. Because it's a Prince track. So it's got to be a recording out there where he's saying it. Then he's, okay, here's how I want you to sing it. Listen to it. And so then Morris had to sing it that way. Prince singing this would not have the same type of swagger. It'd be a completely different tone of a song. Not that it would be bad, but Morris will have done this better. Because it's a Morris song. So, you know. Then again, what's that one song from Crystal Ball that was a Morris track?
Movie star.
I can't see Morris singing that and making it better than the way Prince did. So I think, though, with Release It, I think Morris got this one. And so, yeah, it's definitely a 9 out of 10.
Yeah. I totally agree with, again, everything you said. I mean, it seems like we're on the
same page. We're a lot more closer with these scores than you think. Let's put it that way.
Really? Yeah. Really? Well, this will be fun to go through, but yeah. Next we have Question of You, which Ernie, I'll let you start off on this one. I love this track.
Boy. Oh my gosh, yes. So this album is, you said you were 10 years old when it came out. I was 17. I was a senior in high school when this album dropped in the fall of 90. So that was my senior year, being class of 91. So this was my senior soundtrack. I know me and a really good buddy of mine had a falling out. You know, a girl gets in between and, you know, messes things up from time to time. And this was a song that kind of thought had were running through my mind throughout that whole fiasco. Now, me and my boy patched things up. In fact, he was my best man. So, you know, what's done was done. We patched it all up. But yeah, this song is very sentimental to me. Aside from that, I had a coworker ask me, hey, you know, you like Prince, right? I go, yeah. Could you give me something that's a good represent that where he's playing guitar and he's going crazy? All right. And this is one that I would give for that. You want to hear Prince wail on the guitar and just move you like nothing else on the guitar? The question of you'll do that. That, what can I say about that? I mean, the song, I love the structure of it in that it's basically just a bunch of questions. The question of you is just a whole bunch of questions. And like it's like internal monologue type of questions to himself. He isn't singing to anybody in particular, except maybe the reflection in the mirror. And it's just a beautifully structured song, first half and second half, because this is a song of two halves. The first half is him, you know, the lyrics, and which are beautifully written. The second, then you got the interlude of the guitar, which is melts your speakers, and then you have the second half that just gets dreamy with harpsichord and all the I mean, how do you not clap when you're listening to this song? You know, just get into it. And it has one, I have a few different favorite Prince deliveries and lyrics, and this has one of them for me. It's just there's usually like little bits and pieces of different songs that when I hear him sing a certain way, I'm like, oh man, that works for me. It vibes with me the way it sounds. You know, it sounds beautiful. This has one of the deliveries on it. For me, the delivery of the lyric, and I ain't going to try to sing it, but you know, when he says the lyric of the right towards the end of the, before he says a question of you at the end, what is the answer to question of you, that part right there, I love the way he sings that. It just, it works. The music is working along with him. It's harmonized with the music and everything. It's just one of those things that, wow, when he sings that, it's just I love the song just for that. I mean, I love that, and then the rest of it just works along with it. This song, none of these songs I had heard before. I wasn't into the bootleg scene until maybe about a year or two after this album dropped. So I wasn't aware of bootlegs existing. You imagine my mind when I found out they did, right? But so I hadn't heard this. But I remember going, there was no internet. I mean, there was, but not for me. I had no internet then. So back in 90. So if I was going to find information, I have to go to the store. I go to a local Vons or grocery store and go to the magazine section and see if there's anything, you know, Prince related there. And I remember, I don't know if Right On or something, like, I forgot what magazine it was, looked through it. And they were talking about this upcoming album, different song titles. One of them was The Question of You. And another one was Elephants and Flowers. And I thought, man, I got to hear those songs. Just for those titles alone, I got to hear those songs and see where they go. I wasn't wrong with The Question of You. That is one hell of a beautiful song. A highlight for anybody who's getting into Prince, you must hear this song. You must take the song in. And if you ever want to just vibe and just chill and just bob your head when it's dark and the lights are low, throw this one on and I can guarantee you your head's going to be bobbing to it and you'll be clapping along with it as well. This one by far, 10 out of 10.
Absolutely. Absolutely. To me, it's just iconic. And I believe through my research and things that I've read and heard, I believe it was originally tracked in 85, which makes sense for me because it reminds me so much vibe-wise of Under the Cherry Moon. Or maybe I'm confusing it with Joy and Repetition. Maybe that's what I'm confusing it with. But anyway, this song, yeah, what can I say that Ernie hasn't really said? I mean, the point about the vocal rhythm, the vocal cadence, as we call it. Yeah, it's one of Prince's best vocal deliveries on record. I mean, there's so many parts. There's the question of you line, but then there's also the line that goes, all of the questions in my life will be answered when I decide which road to choose. I love the rhythm of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just a great, great song and a absolute highlight of the record. And dare I say, one of the best songs in Prince's entire body of work.
One of them.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, and then we have, what do we have? Elephants and Flowers next?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, Elephants and Flowers. Okay, I give this song personally 8 out of 10. I have in my notes that for me, this song is quintessential Prince in the fact that it blends the carnal aspect of life with the spiritual aspect of life. So you have sex and faith sort of coexisting in one song. The energy of it, it has driving energy, and I love the spiritual message of it. And for me, it resonates on a personal level because the idea of loneliness and sort of, I don't know, social isolation, I guess, being soothed by spirituality and a love for God is something that's highly personal to me and really, really resonates for me on a personal level. For several years now, I've actually been developing a memoir about my history as a Prince fan and how Prince's, not only his behaviors and actions as a person, as an advocate and just a mentor to people, and also, but also the messages in his music, the spiritual messages and things like that have helped, have basically been a source of knowledge for me and helped me grow into a more complete person with ideas on spirituality and sexuality and just life in general. So yeah, I'm developing a memoir around my Prince fandom, and I was actually going to title it Elephants and Flowers because of the message of this song, how God makes creatures in all shapes and sizes, and you know, and the, you know, people's love for God, you know, saving them in a sense, and just, you know, blessing their lives and giving them purpose and giving them peace, really resonated with me. So I picked that as the title for my memoir. I don't know if it's ever going to be completed or if it's ever going to come out, but I appreciate the song just for those reasons and several others. But yeah, this song is a good song. It's not, you know, great, hence why I gave it 8 out of 10. But, friend of the show, Dreamy Pop Royalty, who I've done a lot of Purple Nights podcasts with in the past, has said that Prince's gruff vocal delivery on this track sort of rubs her the wrong way, and she doesn't listen to it very often because of that. And I don't know if it's actually a purposeful thing that Prince did to sort of incorporate the Jamie Starr type gruffer vocal delivery, or if he might have had a chest cold or something when he recorded it, but whatever it could be, whatever the reason is, I think the gruff vocal actually works in the song's favor for me. It seems to fit. Maybe I would feel differently if I heard a a different vocal take that's maybe out there in the vault somewhere, possibly. But for me, the gruff vocal seems to fit the song really well, and it doesn't, you know, it isn't off-putting to me at all. It sort of adds to the uniqueness and the charm of the song for me. Ernie, what are your thoughts on Elephants and Flowers?
Well, like I said, this was one of the tracks that intrigued me from the title itself. So I was very happy to finally hear the song. To kind of go off of what you're saying regarding the gruff voice, I think he tends to use, because he does it in a lot of songs, and it tends to be with songs where it's a forceful presentation. And if you imagine the song in a high voice, and if Prince singing in a high voice, he tends to sing songs in high voice when it's more like a female type of voice. And I don't know if that would work with this kind of a track, because it almost requires it. This track has a message to give you, and he wants to give you that message as best he can. He wants the message to come first and foremost, and not to focus so much on the delivery of the message, but the message itself, where when he goes high voice, you really pay attention to it, how he's singing it, you know. People listen to a door, but if he sang a door in his regular voice, it wouldn't have the same impact. And it would still be a great song because of the lyrics, but the impact and the way it's sung wouldn't work because it's not in a falsetto. Here, his regular tenor voices, it works good, and it works right because it's a message that's being given out to somebody, to those that's listening to it. So I think that works. And it is a positive song and a positive message. For me, it's more the music that sends me over on it than anything else, though. And again, this one's also a nostalgic track to me because this did come out of my senior year. When I hear this song, I think of winter. I don't know why. It reminds me of winter time and sitting around in my living room from my big old TV with one of the big butt TVs. They didn't have no flat screens then, big old thing. And then playing Sega Genesis right there, man. That's what it reminds me of as a senior doing that. But this is a good song. However, it's a slightly better in the way it's given to you, and the structure and everything is pretty mediocre. Prince could do songs like this in his sleep. So it's not groundbreaking. The message is a good message, but it's not a groundbreaking structure or anything crazy that he hasn't done a million times before.
Right.
Now, that said, not just anybody can do mediocre all the time when they want to make it sound this good. So,
Right.
So a Prince mediocre song is actually a very good song. But in terms of Prince catalog, it's fairly mediocre. It's above average, and I give it a 7 out of 10. Now, 7 out of 10 is not bad.
No.
But this is a very strong album anyways. So it's mediocre, but it's good.
And then we have one of my least favorite tracks on the record. Tevin Campbell, Round and Round.
Well, I mean, at least he didn't have him sing the P, right? That would have been awkward. It would have been weird if he had to sing that song instead. So, I mean,
yeah.
Because I know that was supposed to be one of Tevin's songs also. But
really?
Yeah, the P was written for Tevin Campbell.
Wow.
It always seemed kind of weird. But, you know, whatever. Hey, if that's what he did, it's what he did, right? So, but no, this song here, again, it harkens back to the idea that this is an irregular type of soundtrack for Prince, and that you have other artists singing with him. Didn't have that in Purple Rain or Under the Cherry Moon or even Sign of the Time. There was no other, those were all soundtrack type albums, Sign of the Time sort of, right? But they're all kind of soundtrack type albums. And there were no other singers along with that. It's just Prince and whatever band he was with at the time. But here we have another artist doing this. I kind of see this because that's the case. This is, I take it like a breather track. It's like a buffer type of track between Elephants and Flowers and We Can Funk, two great songs. So it's a buffer in between there, kind of let you catch up. I wouldn't necessarily call it a skippable song because it is a good pop song, but you have to be in the mood for it. And if you're not in the mood for the song, well, then I can see somebody skipping it. It's okay. What, if anything, because this is one of the two actual new songs for this collection here. This was a new song at the time. If anything, it tells you that in 1990 or 1989, when it was likely written, it was probably written in 90 as well, as proficient as he was. So let's say 1990 when he wrote it, that tells you that Prince could write a catchy pop song in 1990.
Yep.
And at the time when it was released, he was still good enough to be able to write a catchy pop song. So that's what it, that tells you, if anything. And it is catchy with okay lyrics. I mean, it's not anything profound or anything. It's just,
yeah,
it's not schmaltzy. It's poppy, because schmaltzy will come in later in this thing, you know, and that this is not that. But again, it's just very run of the mill. It is a buffer song and it is skippable for some. Sometimes for me, sometimes I'll listen to it, but I did like it when it first came out. And I think what I like most is that, oh, it's a Prince song from the new soundtrack. And then the video comes out and I like seeing that. So I'm, it's more about having seen the video, accompanying video, than anything else. So this is very mediocre, though. It's 6 out of 10.
Yep. Yep. I was a little more harsh. I gave it a 4 out of 10, which is the second lowest score that I gave any track on the album. But, I don't really have much to say about it. I mean, I haven't heard any of Tevin's other music, so maybe I would enjoy his voice a lot more once his voice changed.
Yeah, because he was very, had a little kid's voice in the song. He didn't sing like this afterwards.
Yeah, a very prepubescent voice, and I don't know, it just does nothing for me. It's like,
it's almost annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like it's like he's trying too hard vocally for me. But yeah, I usually, you know, 9 times out of 10 when I listen to this album, I usually skip this song. But that's not to say, like you said, Ernie, it's a really good pop song and it's somewhat catchy, especially the chorus. And I love the message about, you know, it's one of those carpe diem songs, you know, seize the day and don't just sit around and let life happen. You know, go out and do things and interact with life and make your own life happen. I love that message and the vibe of that message overall, but as a song, this one's a skipper for me. But yeah, that's round and round. And then we get to a collaboration between Prince and funk legend George Clinton. And I would say this isn't obviously this isn't a full-fledged P-Funk track, because Prince features heavily on it and George is more of a, like a featured artist in the style of the songs on, say, Raven to the Joy Fantastic, like when you mentioned earlier. But Weak and Funk, I give the Graffiti Bridge version a 7 out of 10. It's a great song at its core, very fun, very funky to listen to, but I just find George Clinton's additions and inputs and the changes that he made from the original Prince track, which is Weekend F, I won't say the word because I've got a wide audience on YouTube and Spotify and stuff like that, so I don't want to get in trouble for cursing. But the original song is more up my alley. In fact, I would give the original song a 10 out of 10. But this song with the tamer lyrics, and I understand why Prince had to censor himself, you know, to release the song to a wider audience. And I'm sure, you know, in his lifetime, there was no way Warner's was going to let him release a song, you know, with the F word clearly in the title. But as far as George Clinton's additions and ad-libs and changes that he made to the song. I really don't like them, and they're really off-putting to me. The metaphor of, you know, funk being a disease, or like a urinary tract infection, basically, is really off-putting to me, and brings the song down a couple notches in the rating. But other than that, this song is very, very funky and one of Prince's best vocal performances, if not on the album, if not of the decade of the 90s. You know, it could be argued that this is one of Prince's most passionate vocal deliveries ever on a song. But yeah, all the Prince elements are fantastic. But I give it a 7 out of 10 because of the George Clinton awkwardness about, testing positive and peeing in cups and all that. So, Ernie, what are your thoughts on Weak and Funk?
Well, I have two scores for this one.
Okay.
A before and after score.
Yep.
All right. So, Purple Rain Deluxe, this was an 8 out of 10. After We Can F came out, this is a 6 out of 10. It dropped this one because obviously this came from that, and that is far superior.
Yes.
I agree with you 100%. That is a 10 out of 10 track. We Can F is a 10 out of 10 track. I don't argue that one with me. You cannot change my mind that it is a 11 out of 10.
Yep.
I'm gonna stop because then I'm gonna be going for 15-20 minutes just talking about that song. So I'm gonna stop with that. But it's just, but the fact that I would go that long talking about song just tells you why this rating went from an 8 a few years ago to now a 6, because it's just inferior. It's the inferior version. Overdubs and the production on this shows you that not always is more better. Since that outtake version blows this out of the water. At the time, though, I did love it. And I thought of it as an 8 and a strong one at that. But now it is a 6. Still good song. It's good. But I would tell somebody who says, oh, I like that song. Really? Well, you got to hear the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you like this one, there's no way you're not going to like that one. And yeah. I mean, the additions to this song here don't make it a great song. It makes it different. What makes the other version, the earlier version, greater is that it's more sparse. Plus, you have that whole ethereal section on it that just knocks it out of the park.
Yep.
So again, I'm gonna bring the reins back. Otherwise, I'll be talking about that track all day long. So yeah, today it's now a 6 out of 10. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And I should say, you know, disclaimer. No disrespect to George Clinton at all, because he's done, you know, a lot of stuff that I really, really enjoy, and a lot of stuff that's legendary and mind-blowing all that. But Weak and Funk, I'm just not feeling his input on it, plain and simple. And I don't know. I'm just trying to be honest. You know, no disrespect to the legend, but yeah, it is what it is. Right. So now we get to the, to me, the gem of the album, Joy in Repetition. Ernie, start us out on this one. What are your thoughts on Joy in Repetition?
Well, first of all, I'm going to tell you that our scores are not going to be the same on this one.
How's okay. That?
All right. But let me clarify why. Well, I'll tell you why at the end of this as to why it's not the same. And I have a valid reason why it's not the same, or why your scores will not be the same.
Okay, maybe you'll change my score then.
No, well, I might. It might. We'll see. We'll see if it does. Okay, so the question of you, right, will answer the question of whether Prince is a great guitar player or not. So you have some people, you go, is he a good guitar player? Give me proof. All right. Question of you. There you go. There's some proof right there. There's other songs, right? But that's definitely one that does that, where the question of you will give proof to his guitar playing. This particular song answers the question of his lyrical ability and ability to paint an atmosphere with a song. Can Prince do that? Oh, yes, he can. Here's Joy and Repetition. Plus, there's some cool guitar playing it in there as well. You know, this is one that you could cue up right back to back with Ballad of Dorothy Parker. And it would make a great 1-2 punch.
Yep.
Another song that tells a story beautifully. And the only thing is that this one's got a little bit more guitar. Musically, this one's a little bit more heavy, in my opinion, than Ballad of Dorothy Parker. It was originally nothing more than a drum beat, if anything. But the storytelling in this song is just beautiful. This song is another song that deserves a good sound system or some very good headphones to listen to. There is so much going on in this song. Things that are happening on different sides, on different tracks, on different parts and everything. This song is just wild. And yes, it deserves to be heard appropriately and deserves to be heard loud. And that whole, there's Joy and Repetition, the final one that he does in the song where he yells it out. Woo! Gold. When he yells out that final, there's Joy and Repetition. That enough for me is a 10 out of 10. But this is not a 10. Why isn't it a 10? This is actually a 9.99 out of 10. Why? Because the cassette version, and possibly the vinyl, I can't verify that, but the cassette version is half a second longer than any streaming service version, than the CD version. There is one extra note on that one that gives it a final end, because that is technically the end of that side on the cassette. So when you hear it on the cassette, it plays high, it goes, then it ends. Where on the CD, since it's sequential, there is no sides. It immediately, abruptly, and in a jarring way, goes right into Love Machine. And that was not the intent. The intent was to hear this song, let it end, and then you take a breather, whoo, flip the cassette, put in the other one, and it starts off hard. With Love Machine, that's what was the intent. So because of the way it does that on the CD version, it's a 9.99. You put it out of its misery too soon by cutting that little piece. It shouldn't do that. What it should do is it should do that little bit of that little tone at the end, have blank space, and then come in with Love Machine. Maybe have an unusually long blank space to prep you for Love Machine. But it shouldn't go right into it, butted together. It's not that. It butts together like Dear Michelangelo and The Love Bazaar. But that works. Here it doesn't. And so that's why for me, it's a 9.99. So close. The cassette version is a 10.
Totally, completely on point. I totally agree with you. And I was gonna say something about that in my notes, but I thought maybe that's a little too nitpicky, but you're absolutely right.
But it
right.
matters. That's why it so completely matters.
Yeah, it does. It does. It does. And it's completely correct and completely valid opinion. And I grew up with, you know, the first format I got Graffiti Bridge on was cassette. So, I'm absolutely there with you. The you know, the abrupt ending on CD is, it's a real shame. And I agree with you on the longer pause in between Joy and Repetition and Love Machine, just to give you a little breather and allow your mind to sort of reset before the next song starts. But yeah, this song, I mean, I don't even know, you know, how to articulate how much I love this song. I think it's one of Prince's best in the top 10 for me, if not top 5 all time. I really think it should have been on Sign of the Times. As great as that album is and turned out to be, you know, with the the final sequence. I mean, could you imagine, you know, like Ernie said, the 1-2 punch of Dorothy Parker into joint repetition? I mean, forget about it. You know, I would get the vapors and pass out, you know, from that from that sequence. But yeah, what a tremendous song. And then there's you know, the live versions, most notably the one from the World Nightclub in New York City that was featured on the One Night Alone live disc.
That's good.
Which, you know, funny story about that, you know, the band was running late to the gig, so the band didn't get there until like halfway through that performance. So Prince had to shoulder it all by himself, even though in the performance he calls out, you know, Larry Graham and Candy Dolfer and all those people, you know, you're about to hear them play Joy and Repetition. They weren't there yet. They got there after the performance had started. So to me, just a tremendous live performance. And yeah, anybody that's interested in, you know, hey, I want to hear a song or a track where, you know, Prince completely slays on the guitar, we'll play on this live version of Joy and Repetition. And
yeah,
it's outstanding. So yeah, iconic, legendary song. For me, the absolute highlight of the album, with the caveat that, yeah, on the CD and digital versions, that last 1 second is shaved off. And yeah, the more I think about it, the more I agree. It's actually making me kind of upset now that we don't have the quote unquote full version readily available, and the estate needs to rectify that as well. But yeah, Joy and Repetition. I mean, the lyrics are great. You know, Ernie's point about storytelling was spot on. You know, to me, the lyrics are almost poetic in a sense, you know. And again, you know, Prince's vocal delivery, where he delivers a line with a lot of words very fast. And, you know, he locks himself in the articulated manner in which he said them. You know, that's hard to get out, you know, just by speaking, let alone singing it. But he pulls it off with his vocal delivery, and it's great. But yeah, one of the best Bridge tracks of all time in my estimation. Joy and Repetition.
I agree, 100%. I agree.
We've got Love Machine. I rated this a little lower because it's fun. You know, it's got that fun, you know, Morris Day and the Time, fun, funky, playful energy to it. It kind of reinforces that image of Morris as a horn dog womanizer, you know? So it's kind of amusing to listen to in that respect. But for me, it's a pretty average, you know, funky pop tune. The thing that really stands out to me is the vocals by Alisa Fiorillo, and I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Alisa, but her voice and her delivery is like, you know, sexy to the extreme. I mean, I just get shivers just thinking about how she delivers the lines in this song. I mean, it's really, yeah, I'll stop there and go take a cold shower quick. But anyway, yeah, that's my favorite element of the song. A pretty average song, so I gave it a 6 out of 10 for me. Yeah. Ernie, what are your thoughts on Love Machine?
Not too much, actually. I mean, it's a fun song. It's another one of those very Morrissey type songs that really only he could really do it, and it's there to showcase his personality. At the time that it comes out in the movie, it's there to showcase him as the playful pimp, and that's what it does. That's the point of it. There's another track that reminds me of house party music. But this one, what I like about it is that it doesn't wear out its welcome. It's not too long, so it's there. It shows you this is Morris, this is him. Check it out. Check out how he's gonna play this girl, and then he does it, and there you go. And then, I mean, the beat's cool, but it's not like one of those things where I mean, back in high school, and you know, I'd be like, ah, yeah, it's a good song. You know, it's crazy. But now, I mean, I'm dang near 50 years old, I ain't gonna come at it with the same type of energy like that now. So for me, it's like, yeah, it's a cool song and all, but I mean, I ain't no pimp, so why am I gonna relate to this, you know?
Yeah,
So
exactly.
it's a very, very mediocre song, but it's fun. It is a fun song, and the back and forth between him and Elisa is very nice and very tensiony, I guess you could say. Seven out of
Yeah.
10. 7 out of 10 for me. Yeah.
Yeah, definite sexual tension with that. And I will
Yeah.
say that there's, the aspect of how it's presented in the movie kind of annoys me, because I think it does injustice to not only Aliza but Jill Jones as well, because it's portrayed in the film as a vehicle for Jill Jones, and Jill Jones essentially lip syncs Aliza's part in the film. So I know a lot of fans, especially back in the day, were confused and actually thought it was Jill on the track. It's not. It's Elisa Fiorillo, and it kind of does injustice to both ladies, to me, to sort of create that weird confusion around that. So, but that really has no bearing on the song itself, but it's just a side observation that I had. But yeah, it's a fun track, and not really much else to say about it. Then we have this is probably where our ratings and our tastes will diverge the most in this review. Tick Tick Bang, Ernie, what are your thoughts?
I would say no, not yet on that,
Oh,
because
really?
yeah, I do like this song. I do like this version. I've always liked this song, actually. I didn't know about the 81 version or anything like that. And when I did hear it, it doesn't work for me. It doesn't work as a weird punk type of song. It's very weird, very
Thank you.
jarring.
Thank you. I could hug you right now. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
I
it's
feel the same.
very weird, you know. I mean, it's not that it's a meh, I'm not gonna say it's a good song. It's just like it sounds very much like a throwaway song presented that way, where when it's presented this way, it works. There are dated samples in it and everything, but that doesn't distract me from enjoying it even now, you know. There's really not much more to say about it. It's energetic fun. Again, a lot of innuendo in there. It's sexy but not dirty. So that's what's cool about it. I think this one is an 8 out of 10.
Okay. I give it one higher. I give it a 9, because it's just such a guilty pleasure. It just feeds into my macho baser reptile brain. It sort of, it tickles my fancy that way. But yeah, it's just the typical horn dog prince that the committee that the committee that Tipper Gore headed in the 80s, about profanity and explicit lyrics and content. It would be another one of those songs where they pointed out, they say, "See, Prince is a crazed, oversexed maniac," but Yeah, I just love this track. Everything about it from the you know, the sample of the drums, which is from Jimi Hendrix's track Little Miss Lover. I love the heaviness and the funkiness of the drums, and this is another one of those tracks that to my ears sounds very, very rooted in the 1990s and the musical aesthetics of that decade. But I just love this song. You know, it has me grinning from ear to ear. You know, my mind is in the gutter probably 80% of the time anyway. So a song like this really, really appeals to me in my baser, not so sophisticated nature. So yeah, this song is definitely a guilty pleasure, and I know we're in the minority, Ernie, because I know a lot of Prince fans prefer the 81 punk new wave version, but it just doesn't work for me. And this version is so much fun, and it's so tongue in cheek and just playful and just a lot of fun. So I appreciate it for that.
Yeah. It's not that the 81 version is the bad version. It's just really a different song.
Yeah, a totally different song. Exactly. Yeah. So, and then we have next we have.
We got the ever popular Shake.
So, yeah, I a lot of people dog this track, but I actually gave it an 8 out of 10 because I you know, it's you know, the similar arguments that I had for Release It kind of apply here. You know, the drum, the beat of the drums and bass, and especially the bouncy, you know, 1960s like go-go dancing style keyboard. There's something about it that I really, really like, and I like Morse's the rhythm and the cadence of Morse's vocal delivery, and it's somewhat shouty, but it kind of gives the vibe of, you know, like he's really catering to the audience and trying to get the audience involved. So it's like he's sort of egging them on with the vocal, you know. Hey, people, what you come here for, and stuff like that. But yeah, I really, really like this track, and it reminds me of a track from the 60s by an obscure group called Question Mark and the Mysterians, and the song is called 96 Tears. But the keyboard and shake kind of reminds me of that song. So if you're not familiar, go look
Oh,
it
I know
up.
which song that is now. I was trying to think of what song that was.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I know which song that is now. Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, those are my thoughts. I gave it 8 out of 10 just because I love it, have a lot of fun with it. Ernie, what are your thoughts on Shake?
All right. So this track is completely unnecessary. I don't like it. To me, it sounds like some kind of outtake. I don't like the delivery on it. I'm of that camp that does not like the song. To me, it's just extremely generic and simple. This song is too long, and
Okay.
it wears out its welcome, in my opinion. You know, it's kind of it's this is the bird on Ritalin. It's just no good. It's a slow down and drag down, and it's not a good thing. I skip this a lot more than I actually listen to it.
Okay.
All the way through, and the whole last minute of the song for me just drags. If I do listen to it, this is what I mean. I'll usually go to like about the 3 minute mark, and then okay, I'm done, and on to the next song. That said, it's still a better song than the latest fashion, in my opinion. It should
Yes.
have. I think being that you have so many different tracks to go with from the time around this time from Pandemonium, basically. They should have, and they did have Blondie playing in the background during the movie. So they should have had either that song playing, them performing that song instead of this, or this should have been included in the soundtrack instead of Shake, if not Blondie, that is. Or I think would have been the obvious choice to put on here instead of Shake would have been Jerk Out.
Yeah.
And then they would have really helped it, because this is kind of, I don't like the song. For me, this is a 4 out of 10, and that is not my lowest score. Well, we think you and I both have our lowest score.
Yep,
so
yep,
four out of ten for this one, though. I just don't. Okay. It's not for me.
Okay, I can respect that. Like I said, I know a lot of people dog this track. So
yeah.
So you're definitely not alone in that one. But I can totally respect it, especially since we've been on the same wavelength for most of the album. But
yeah,
yeah. But, okay, yeah, and then we have a track that I actually discovered the fact that there was a new album and an actual film based on the fact that I bought this track as a cassette single. And, you know, I read the credits, you know, from the forthcoming film Graffiti Bridge, and I was like blown away. I'm like, oh my God, Prince is going to have another new movie. But that's, you know, that's tied into my initial memories of the song. But Thieves in the Temple, the album version, I gave a 9 out of 10. It's just an example how Prince can write a great pop tune with a great chorus, and again, more great storytelling. You know, when I bought the cassette single, I actually, with my vivid imagination and my penchant for daydreaming, I actually came up with a movie plot of this guy being rescued from this prison or whatever he was in, you know, based on the lyrics of the song and Prince's sort of quasi theatrical you know, delivery of the lyrics. You know, I thought it would make a great movie on its own, just based on the lyrics of the song. But yeah, great pop tune, and I love the music video with the extended version of the song with the rap sections and stuff like that. And also, it's got one of Prince's, you know, greatest, you know, screams at the end of the song. You know, really heart-wrenching, you know, gut-wrenching scream at the end with the glass breaking and all that. So I think it's one of Prince's certainly most accessible pop tunes for the masses in the decade of the 90s. And I really, really like it. I love the harmonica. I love the bongos and the tambourine, and it's got a really neat Arabic sound. I know it was the song that kickstarted, you know, my Tay's journey with Prince, according to her memoir. Mm-hmm. So it's a really, really, really good song. So I gave it a 9 out of 10. Ernie, what are your thoughts on Thieves of the Temple?
It makes sense that you say that this was according to Maite, this is the song that kicked off that Arabic vibe, because this is the second of the two songs that's a new track. And like you said as well, this is for the proof that he can do a pop song at the time, because it's a great pop song. My score on this one, it's a 9.5 out of 10, because the 12 inch is the 10. To this day, yep, when I listen to this song, I'll still tap the cadence to it. You know, the lyrics are great on it. The music is great on it, especially that 12-inch breakdown and everything. This is required listening if ever you want to put together a best of. You got to put this in here, but get the 12-inch version. So, I mean, there's not much more really to add to it. It's 9.5 out of 10, only because the 12 inch booted up to the 10 point.
Yep. I agree. I'm in total agreement. And this is another spot to say that, Princess State, if you're listening, if you're out there, if we're on your radar, if you're listening to this right now or watching it on YouTube, please, I implore you to put out a 12-inch collection of 12-inch versions, officially remastered, the whole spiel, because we need the 12 inches officially released and compiled together in one collection.
That would be cool. Yeah.
Where they're easily accessible. So next we have, the latest fashion. I mean,
yeah.
do we want to spend like 30 seconds on this track?
I can read everything I have in about that time. It's easy for me. So yeah. I'll just go on this one here really quick. Basically, once you've heard my summertime thing, then you'll never want to hear this song. That's what should have been on here instead. Like the part of the movie that had this song was removed, this should have been removed as well. Yeah. That's pretty much all I have to say. I mean, Prince's rap is mad cornball. It is not cool at all. And this song is proof that sometimes you can morph something too much, you can work on things too much and turn it into something inferior.
I could use a baking analogy. You know, if people are out there that are bake, if you knead the dough too much, it makes the dough tough and not right. Tender. It makes the dough too tough. So it's the same principle applies here. If you overwork something, you can morph it into something ugly and unappealing, I guess you could say.
I mean, even Morris's version of the latest fashion, where it's just, I think it's just, is it him or was it Prince that sang the latest fashion? The original one. There was an original version of it, and it's slower tempo and everything. That sounds better than this. Then that morphed into my summertime thing, and then it morphed further into this version of the latest fashion. It and the other previous versions were just way better than this. So
yeah,
not for me to give it any more time, put it out of its misery and give it 3 out of 10.
Yep. I have the same score, 3 out of 10. And all I basically have in my notes is I've heard it 3 times, maybe in 30 years. So that'll tell you how much patience and how much time I have for this track. But yeah.
One for each number. 1, 2, 3. So 3 out of 10.
Exactly. Yep. So. Yep. A listen for each point on the 10 scale. So
there you go.
Yep. So then we have Melody Cool, which is one of the songs that's grown on me over time. But as a 10-year-old in 1990, I didn't get it. You know, why is this lady that I have no idea who she is taking up space on a Prince album? You know, and of course, I had no idea at that time how legendary and how talented Mavis Staples was and is. So you could just, forgive that on the basis of childhood ignorance. But but as time passed and I learned more about Mavis's history and all that, the accomplishments that she's had, especially in gospel music with her siblings, I sort of amended my take on this song, I guess you could say. And so now I appreciate it a lot more than I did when I was younger. very, very funky tune. I love Mavis's no nonsense, strong black woman energy. I love that. And the backing vocals by Prince and the Steels are really, 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 really great. Awesome stuff. And one interesting fact about me is, as a kid, I always thought that the way this song opens up with the really intense music underneath Mavis's monologue sounded to me like the soundtrack from a horror movie like Nightmare on Elm Street or something like that. So it really, every time this song came on, it really freaked me out because that music was so creepy to me, to my 10-year-old ears. So
Yeah.
that's kind of an embarrassing confession, but whatever. But yeah, funky tune, and I love the unreleased outtake, the Prince vocal version. So if the estate comes out with an originals too, ever, Prince's version of Melody Cool would be good to have on a collection like that. So, Ernie, what are your thoughts on Melody Cool?
I don't have too much. It's a very mediocre song. The score on it is a 5 out of 10. It's another breather song, very similar to Round and Round. It's all great. It's okay, but it's just nothing great or memorable. The fact that not counting the intro, so when the song actually kicks in with that beat, it's about 3 minutes long, and I think that's what winds up actually saving it. I see it more as it's the track that plays before a great track, basically.
Sort of the opening course or the hors d'oeuvre to a fuller meal, a better meal.
So
So
I don't know if I get the score, but yeah, just 5 out of 10, pretty mediocre, very
yeah,
mediocre for
I
that.
don't know if I gave my score either. I gave it a 6 out of 10. Basically an extra point for how cool I think Mavis is. Yeah, and then we have Still Would Stand All Time. I might have to amend this because my original score that I gave it in my notes was 9 out of 10. I think I'm gonna have to amend this to 10 because I don't know, it's just such a deep, meaningful song for me personally, and every time I listen to it, it resonates in my soul, and it's a very reverent, very spiritual, transformative tune. I would say, if we're comparing this to Purple Rain, since the film is a quasi sequel, I would say this would be akin to Purple Rain as far as the vibe and the intention, as far as how it works as a plot device in the film. But yeah, Still Would Stand All Time is definitely one of the songs that I feel most represents Prince's overall spiritual philosophy, before pre the Jehovah's Witness conversion. And the backing vocals especially are very, very sublime and ethereal and very well done. And again, that's Prince with the Steels gospel group, and they did such a good job on both songs. There are a few songs that they're featured on this album, and yeah, I just love them. JC was the or JD, I'm sorry, JD Steele was the MC at the celebration I w attended in 2019, and he did a wonderful job. So that whole family just seems like great people, and very, very immensely talented singers. And I love the thing I love most about this song is Prince's passionate vocals towards the end. He really gets really heart-wrenching and heartfelt, and it feels like, to me, it gives the feeling or the vibe of a preacher preaching in his pulpit, testifying to the glory of God and the difficulty of the human experience and the glory of God as it relates to deliverance from life's trials and tribulations, as it were. But Ernie, what are your thoughts on Still Would Stand All Time?
It's a beautiful song. It could have been placed as a closer. I agree. I think when he tracked this, he may have tracked it similar to how the songs appear in the movie. If he'd have done that with Purple Rain would not have been the closer. It would have been Purple Rain, then I Would Die For You, and then Baby I'm a Star, right? If he'd have tracked it like it was in the movie. And I think that's what he kind of did here instead. Because Part Two of New Power Generation is what closes the movie, basically, with the credits and all that. So I think that's what he did here, but it could have worked as a closer on the album proper. Personally, and I know that some people go back and forth with this, I'm kind of the party of enjoying the grand progression more than this. I don't know if that necessarily would have been a good closer, but I enjoy it a little bit more, probably because I just don't care much for a highly preachy song. I've never liked those kind of songs from him. But that's just personal preference. I understand why you like it as much as you do, but for me, it's because it's too preachy for me. I don't care much for it, and I kind of lose attention right around the 3 minute and 30 second mark, because that's where he really goes to the pulpit, and it's not my thing. So I don't much care for it there. But before that, it's a beautiful song. And that's why I prefer the grand progression, because it doesn't really go there. That said, the gospel angle on the second part of the track, I think it does make a great closer for the album, though, because the album is spirit. The album and the movie is a very spiritual message. So it works on that end. But I do like the song. So my score is a 7 out of 10.
Okay, that's fair enough. And then we have basically the reprise of track two, which is...
You missed one.
Oh, did I miss one?
Yeah,
oh,
the Olive Porn one.
Oh, yeah. Well, forgive me, because
I can see why you missed it.
I only skipped over the worst track of the entire album. But, and the title track, Graffiti Bridge. Ernie, what do you got to say about this track?
Okay, I'm going to amend this one, because I originally had it a 2 out of 10, but I gave it too much credit by saying that the inclusion of a guitar barely bumped it up from a 1 to a 2. No, it bumps it up only half. That's a 1.5 out of 10. Lyrically, this song is just incredibly corny. It's a cornball mess. I think the only thing worse is Purple and Gold, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, some people dig it. Wink, wink, Michael Dean. And that's cool. But I'm not one of those folks. I don't like it. I would prefer hearing Jughead to this. Why?
Yes.
Because Jughead at least has a driving beat, and the instrumentation on Jughead is actually pretty good. Forget the lyrics. The instrumentation of the song is good. Here, I don't even have that. It doesn't do it for me. It just sounds really cheesy, and it's unnecessary. He could have done much better, I think.
Yeah. I wasn't as forgiving about the guitar in there, so I gave it a 1 out of 10, just because I can't stand to give any Prince related song a 0, or any song for that matter, because I have such respect for music and musicians. But yeah, this is a 1 out of 10 for me. And the only thing I have in my notes for this song is corny AF.
Yeah,
so there you go.
Yep. I can't argue that.
And then we get to the closer of the album, kind of an odd closer. You know, it's you know, I as I as we said before, you know, both of us said before when we talked about part one of New Power Generation that this track shouldn't have been split into two. It should have stood as one complete track. And so the my score gets dinged a little bit because it was separated. So I gave it a 6 out of 10. And the only main other point that I had that I wanted to bring up about this New Power Generation Part 2 was TC Ellis is heavily featured, and love TC, saw him at the celebration I was at, and he gave a great speech and a great talk about Prince, and the message of his rap is really admirable and inspirational in places, how he was able to rise above, you know, the environment he was in, both internally and externally. But something about his gruff, louder, gruff, you know, flow with the rap is kind of off-putting for me. It kind of runs contradictory to the message that he's rapping about. You know, just the vibe of his gruff, loud delivery of the lyrics. So that's kind of off-putting for me, but other than that, it's kind of a, it's just the continuation of part one. So it, as a standalone, it doesn't really work, and it's more of a glorified segue to me, or like a tacked on outro. But like Ernie said, it kind of makes sense because that's what plays over the credits of the film. So it is quite literally an outro for the film. So I can sort of forgive it, you know, for being not on the album, but I give it a 6 out of 10. So, Ernie, what are your thoughts on New Power Generation part 2?
Right. Well, kind of going along with you here. This is the only track I really don't score. I can't really score this one because it should be part of the other one. The other one was scored an 8. So it's not like I'm saying, oh, well, this is an 8. No, it's not its own separate track, really. It's a continuation of the other ones. It's not really, it doesn't work on its own. If you were to just hear this on its own, you would think, oh, what happened? Why did it fade in? Like, where's the rest of it? So, I mean, it doesn't work by itself. You have to know the first one exists, part one exists to know that part two exists. And they don't, you can't listen to just part two on its own. It doesn't work. The only thing I'm sorry, I don't really score this one. I think it's just a little interesting tidbit how it uses a couple of mentioned lyrics from My Tree, from the I'll Take My Tree. It's in there at the beginning. And that one harsh guitar lick that you hear at the beginning of when it fades in on the song on this track is the same guitar lick that you hear on the single that came out on the maxi single for New Power Generation, Get Off. And that's Get Off with one T. And so you get that screechy guitar at the beginning of that song. And the only other thing I have here, maybe going along that same vein, going down that same maxi single, this song could have just been added to the original. And if you needed something else on it, I think a good ending credit song would have been Love Left, Love Right. That would have worked, you know. So this doesn't really work as a closer. It's kind of weird that it's there, but it's there. So there you go. So no score, no score. Foul, foul, no score. Flag on the play. Can't score this one.
Yeah, I enjoy the New Power Generation maxi single quite a bit. I think at least a few of the tracks could have been included if it was, if the Graffiti Bridge material was reconfigured into a Prince solo album from the era. I think a few of the maxi single tracks could have been included on that quantum realm configuration, as our friend Michael
Michael
Dean
Dean
would
says,
say.
yeah.
So, yeah, overall thoughts on the album? Great album. You know, strong album, strong spiritual album. It was interesting to me how this is the first, it wasn't known at the time, or maybe it was by a select few, that Prince had pulled the majority of the tracks from the vault and reworked them and updated their sound. But, you know, looking back, this is sort of the first example of Prince doing that with the majority of an album project. He would pull vault songs here and there for regular albums, but not, you know, he wouldn't have 80% of the album made up of vault tracks. This is the first instant of that, and maybe the only other comparable official release I can think of that does that is, well, there's Crystal Ball, but that doesn't really count in my mind, because that was
intentionally that way,
deliberately meant to mimic, you know, bootlegs. But the only other you know, proper album that I could think of that to take that route, to be, you know, a majority of vault tracks, would be not necessarily vault tracks, but just older tracks that hadn't been released, would be Hit and Run Phase 2. Yeah, the Graffiti Bridge album, great album. You know, the album is definitely more highly revered in the Prince fan community at large than the film is. And like I say, at some point, the Purple Nights podcast will take an in-depth look at the film, and I'm hoping we can record a full-length film commentary at some point. The logistics just need to be worked out for that. But, yeah, Ernie, it was great having you on the podcast, and I know you've been on once before for the two-part Purple Rain Deluxe review, and that was fun, but it's nice seeing you on camera for this Zoom recording and putting a face to a name, and you're an intelligent dude, and you're a good-looking dude as well, and congratulations on your retirement.
It's the hair. That's what it is.
Yeah. Congratulations on your retirement as well.
Thank you. Thank you.
So enjoy that. And for Ernie Wilds and myself, this is Chris Johnson saying thank you for watching on YouTube and listening on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And until next time, peace and be wild, everybody.